interrupting the current neo-coronial cricketism. To bring you Behind the Woodshed, this is Cricket Tude Busting episode BTWRLM 447. As we move this thing along, I got excited this week. Found a story, a report. We'll get to it after the first few tabs. We pick up all the dangling chads of political circus. We just kind of hang them out there, but they're there to entertain people. But after that, I'm going to get to a, I may spend quite a bit of time on this next report. It was, like I said, a little bit exciting in a way. Not that it's, this stuff is exciting for the sake of excitement, but I always, I mean, for myself, I'm excited that I may finally be able to explain certain things to people, maybe bring it more present. What I talk about is sitting right in front of us. You want to see the matrix? Today, I'm going to show you a subroutine. They're in the form of these articles, things I look through. I can look right through them and see what they're talking about. I think I have one today, and I want to touch that. I want to maybe spend some time with it. And then after that, we'll just kind of run along and give you all the subject matter that hopefully interests you somewhere if it's not that. And we'll hopefully get people to take control and responsibility for themselves locally, where they are, find an objective basis to defend themselves. And it takes a little bit to learn because we're intentionally not trained to do that. We really have, I'll just say, you have to get past your prejudice like you think you know something. And understand it is an ongoing learning process. There's nothing that I, every day that's something I run across and learn new. Or, more importantly, is what I find important to me is looking at the stuff I saw before, but all of a sudden realizing, having the, if you will, a revelation come forward to say, hey, you can use this way. This thing you've been reading, you didn't really see it quite right, but if you look at it this way, you can do something. Or I guess the other side is that you see the things, people, you know, like I was in a discussion with my friend who was talking about a guarantee of execution of laws because I'm still looking for the requirement that any official has to take a complaint. The execution of laws came up that the officials have to, in the case of the governor, let's say, have to execute the laws faithfully is when I got to the Constitution because I want to review that. I didn't want to, in our complaint, we're not going down the governor's useless to us in the state. And so I'm avoiding that and going down a different track. But when I got to the Constitution, I noticed the suspension clause. And I've seen it before. I've read it. But it didn't hit me until I saw it in conjunction with understanding that the faithful execution of laws is different than suspending the law that's not supposed to be suspended. And I was able to then, I spent a whole 2 days working on bringing that right into the document and saying that for y'all, if you just listen generally here, when there's laws, you have a constitutional requirement that laws are not suspended, and you're not enjoying those laws, the official has suspended those laws unconstitutionally. Again, no silver bullets, but to have that come forward in my mind and relevant to a project I'm working on, and being able to just throw that right onto the problem, all these, because I've got 50-something pages now, broken laws. Any one of which is not regarded as suspension of that law. Anyway, just another angle, just another thing. Don't know where it goes. A lot of this has to do with public opinion. All of this, what you're watching in COVID is public opinion. The political circus is public opinion, and they keep us entertained. Or they keep us not entertained, and we go the other way, but we don't do anything as it's all used as a cover to really essentially destroy us. And you didn't get to the punchline last week relative to the ports, because just ran out of time. There's so much to kind of cover. I almost got there, but we're going to cover that one here in a few moments. But the point is here, what I'm trying to show you is methods to look at the black and white and then utilize it. Understand how to use it. And there's a lot of ways that eventually come to you once you've worked with it, massaged it a bit, chewed it up, kneaded it like the dough that it seems to be when you're looking for remedy that's not going to come. That you, again, make the record and show that it almost can't. It's just not going to happen. And hopefully, you have enough people around you in a world, in your society that wants to say, that's not going to be good enough for us. And start to do things. And again, the more proper way, so that you're not vilified as you go out. You can actually turn the defamation against you around them. And so I want to touch some dangling political chads here that I don't focus on too much, but I don't even know where it came up. But this story did come up. I kind of put it in the back of my mind. It had to do with that election thing. And at the time, I said that when the election for the president transferred, I said, well, the president is the only the defeated president is the only one that would have the right to a standing in order to argue this, and that he hadn't, notwithstanding all the promotion, likely showed that there was something not correct in their position. And at that time, we had Sidney Powell was standing up, the Kraken, and anyway. So I said that it's not looking too good there, but I'll wait. We'll wait and see. Well, I put that all aside. Well, apparently back in March, maybe all of you all know this. I didn't. But I want to touch base, just close this chapter. I think we can close this chapter. The judge grills lawyers from Fox News, Powell, and Giuliani about election fraud claims on $2.7 billion Smartmatic defamation suit. And I said at the time that suit, let's just let that play out. Well, it played out, I guess, pretty quick back then when it came out in January or so. This is a discussion that happened and started in a response from March. And then this judge is still moving. I guess this was in an August story. But the attorneys that were all in our face that were promoting that there was this big election fraud, and I have to say something. I believe there has been an election fraud. I've told you. I know that these machines can be tapped. Whether or not you can prove it, and whether they'll let you at them, is a whole different story. I believe that part. Whether or not these folks could have done it, I don't know. Trump had the standing to pull it out. And he didn't. And so I kind of just dropped that whole thing, but was interested to see how this defamation suit came up. Well, there's a judge now involved in grilling these people that were involved against the defamation suit. I really haven't followed it any further than that. I just want to say that there's still things going on, but back in March, something happened. And it just kind of shines the light that President Q had nothing, apparently, or can't get the things that could be there. Sidney Powell gives up the game, admits Trump's election conspiracies weren't factual. A former Trump campaign lawyer, Sidney Powell, did more than perhaps anyone to push the big lie that President Joe Biden's victory over Donald Trump in last November's presidential election was the result of fraud involving Dominion voting system machines. Now, however, lawyers representing her gave acknowledgement that the big lie is, in fact, just that. And you have to just listen to how they do this. And again, the Bar Association members, you just have to understand who we've been dealing with. Why I wasn't really too excited. I was looking at all the remedy there. We would have seen something very unique in political history, as I told you. And it never came to fruition with all the so-called evidence. So you just have to wait. You just have to wait to see how it works out. Well, Powell faces a $1.3 billion defamation lawsuit from Dominion because of her false claims. On Monday, her lawyer, this is back in March now, on Monday, her lawyers offered her defense. Listen very carefully how these liars do this. I'm not going to believe that's going to stand, but this is what they say. For all y'all, Q people, whatever, all jump in, think you're going to get a big old change. This is what she came up with. Her lawyers came up with a defense for her lying, and it says that, quote, her excuse is against a defamation suit, and you got to get into that one, why they would say this, but here's her answer, that no reasonable person would conclude that the statements Powell made about the election fraud, quote, were truly statements of fact. So what I was telling you, where's the evidence? Okay, not going to buy into that. It'd be interesting. I think it'd be cool. I want to see it if that's the way it happened. Get people all over it. But where is the fact? Give me the evidence. All those stories that were out there, some of them might have been true, but actually the applicable facts, where did they go? We never saw it. And so their defense now is that no reasonable person would have agreed with what she said. Now, I want you to just think about it just a little bit, please, about what we're up against in dealing with. The audacity of these people to come forward. The promotion that was happening. And we had a whole group of people divided. We got a whole group of society divided out and supporting this fraudulent lying condition. And guess what I think it's doing? It's bigger than this, certainly. And I just can't get away from the fact I know these machines, I'm not talking technically hacked, I'm talking about they can be programmed that you wouldn't know exactly what we were told is going on. And yet there's no actual proof, and or this whole thing's a setup in order to get us to look away. So to me, this doesn't fix the election problem. Even if it was a correct election, I've known since 1993 or so, machines can be hacked. There was another woman, I wish I could remember her name, maybe Brown was her name. She found out that the software can be programmed. We all know this. But look at your iPhones and your Androids. They're all set up against you. And so I just want to stop and end this dangling chat. In my mind, there was no proof. It apparently ended way back in March. She admitted that no reasonable person would agree with what she said, saying that everybody who did was unreasonable, certainly. Another, my look at that, just as a society of uncritically thinking people. And the other side that argued didn't really argue the correct thing, like, where's your proof? It's always an emotional contention that gets us wrapped up and gets us off the point. While that circus was going on, other things were happening, and we're now here. Moving on now, just to cloak for myself, my interest was because it would have been a unique thing in history to see the actual proof come to fruition. But the jig was up when the president that got voted out did not move into his standing right at the turn of the election to sue for the fraud that they had been alleging on the run-up. And apparently this was all, we could see that it was all simply to get more. It was a campaign. The company that's suing them for defamation saying the purpose was for campaign fundraising. So the deception's there. Politics is what it is. Proved out again. I was hoping to see a unique thing in history in our time. We're not going to see it. Likely not going to. But it's just showing you the condition and that we keep our time and energy in those places that we're not the cover that it runs, it is still operating against us. And in that, I bring myself back to last week that I didn't get to the punchline, essentially, of the court problem and all that fiasco. It still plays into the breaking of the chain, the supply chains, is part of the process. But it also covered for something that really is the root of this all, which was this story. All-knowing, all-powerful central bank throws in the towel. And it's been nearly 11 years since Ben Bernanke, who was then chairman of the Federal Reserve, sat down with a rare TV interview on 60 Minutes in late 2010. Remember, that's just after they did the toxic debt. We're going to make fraud, monetize fraud. As he sat across the journalist Scott Pelley, Bernanke appeared shaken but not stirred as he was visibly nervous but displayed the emotional detachment of a trauma surgeon. He was especially detached, even dismissive, when addressing concerns about inflation. Well, what's gone on in this whole story? I won't go on and read. The problem is that the central bank has now, kind of like they said, thrown in the towel relative to these interest rates. And what's important about that is that's been happening underneath. Remember the economic servitude that you're being placed under, and the incremental nature and the different points of control they have. Inflation is one of the servitude slaveries that comes on. This debt-based fraudulent fiat system is a weapon of exploitation, of impoverishment and enslavement. That defines the new transformation, the new world order, you would say, the new thing that they claim vaccine policy is to focus now on. What Agenda 2030 says will be your prosperity, which is really austerity. And your behavior, and your liking it, being happy about it. So underneath all this, this intersection going on, was this story that hit the central bank is going to have to change its policies. It's really losing its grip that we've been able to say so. I'm just wanting you to know that, because this inflation is for a reason. What we're seeing is not just planned, but there's that adjustment's going to be coming. again, if you have the way to prepare food for a long term and get ready and get yourself knowledge, and you might need it here in earnest. This is not just this may not be the drill that we've been talking about for many, many years. This is going to, they're talking about interest rates going up. I don't know how they're all going to do this, but again, it's statistics, it's magic, it's just figures on a page. I told you before, how is there a treasury debt tax interest rate on the full faith and credit of you, if you want to think that's what's going on? There's a complete disconnect, and people haven't really put it together. It's being used to harm you. It's being used to bring on this next iteration of slavery, essentially, in this debt system. I just needed you to hear, this is coming underneath the supply chain. They are in control of that. Remember last week I even said that Bretton Woods and the IMF and the World Bank are not part of that system. They're a whole condition apart and in control, given everybody believes in these, the system of fiat, if you will, and we're not turning around and making that immediately going to a parallel system that was, we can point to in the black and white, was to be. And so that's all I can say there. And then we have this story this week, just accentuating the very fact of what's starting to happen. The dollar purchasing power plunges inflation at plus 6.2% for urban wage earners at 6.9%, highest in 40 years, most monstrously overstimulated economy ever. They're not stimulating anyway. They're stimulating paralysis. Anyway, these guys know money better than I do, but this is a story you can read. If you have any idea about what's going on in the so-called the consumer price index fraudulent record, but it's something that you can base this, the values are starting to spike up. In fact, I heard those of you that may get Social Security may know better than me, the cost of living increase went up at about 5.9%. That's already surpassed. So here, everyone get excited to get a couple more bucks, the pensioner, so to speak. And yet, that's already been absorbed. And so this is what starts to happen. If I were, don't want to get too deep into this, but if they go back into going back before 40 years and it should be a little bit earlier than that, where the interest rates went way the heck up, I'm telling you, when it gets into, most of us won't be able to build, most of us will not be in those markets because you just don't have the funds anymore. Your life, the value of your dollar has gone down even more than it was in the 80s. Again, in other words, it was much easier to recuperate back in the 80s with the dollar value. At that time and just before that, it was you could live about 25% of what you took in was for your cost of living, your house, your power, all that. I don't know of anybody that can do that now. So that's another silent encroachment. But if they're going to spikes that went into the markets relative to interest rates, it's going to go into the double digits. We were up at, I think, 23%. I told you at the time, trying to do a loan for a house, if you didn't get it locked in, if you waited 15 minutes, you had to go call the lender another time and say, okay, what is it now? It was rising. Again, all this is fabricated. And certainly then I didn't know much about it, but that's what you had to do if you wanted a deal to go. And it was just, there's no way to kind of get this done. They were pressing us in a little different manner. This was right after also they decoupled the gold from the dollar for sure. That was the final thing about a decade later. So all this is tied again, and they're now referring to that time. It may be coming on us. I'm just saying here, folks, it's been the port thing. I had a link on how it was going through the money channeling, because there, when you looked at inside there, the finances that were being provided were not going to the things that it needed if they wanted it fixed. And these folks are the ones that call that shot. And so, okay, dangling Chad from last week, moving on up. Now I'm getting to get into something now, into dollars, into a system, into the matrix, the one subroutine running in a story that I just happened to run across. And like I said, I may spend quite a bit of time here on this. I'm going to read through it, and this is going to be like a test, if you will. What can you recognize in this article? What can you, as you're looking, as this article is the green code streaming down a black screen. This is the article is that code streaming down. What can you see through that streaming code that talks to you and shows a picture of something behind the actual subject matter that's never mentioned in the code or in the presentation? That you have to, in this case, now go in your mind and understand it. We're not like seeing a picture here. The picture is developed by principles. A lot of times people don't understand these principles. Let me adjust the word principle to an element. An element of a, I'll say, jurisdiction, a subject matter. Okay, so this is how you got to, I say you got to. Yeah, you know, nobody has to do anything. I understand. But this is very important. Anybody that wants to start seeing this, this was one story I think I can pull. I hope I can do this well enough to get you to see what I see if you impart. And it has to do with, again, how do you, people understand, how do I do, you know, how do you go, where do you go? Some of the answer is that you're unfamiliar with the words, and so you don't know where to go, and you haven't read enough, which would help to give you that word power, that context power. The words of which build for concepts and principles that are required. And so that's what this article started to do. And I just want to, okay, so part of this test for you, if I can get through this nice and clean, is I want to try to figure out whether you can see what the actual subject matter they're talking about under a title that says Washington Supreme Court holds impoundment of homeless person's vehicle violates Eighth Amendment. Washington Supreme Court holds impoundment of homeless person's vehicle violates Eighth Amendment. I'm telling you that title, and I didn't know this when I read the title. I found it in the answer to me. Can you, maybe that's a test for you about how much you know about elements of subject matter. The answer was in the first paragraph. But I didn't know that. I just saw the elements building. And I said, this has to be that subject matter. It's not about homeless person's vehicle. It's not about the home. It's not about even that they said that the homeless person's vehicle was a homestead, almost, although I've never heard that a vehicle can be considered a homestead. This becomes an interesting problem for people around. You better go to, because I had to go do this, you have to go to the laws of your state. And this is in Washington State. It actually says that homesteads can be personal property. I didn't know that until I went and read it. Again, go read the black and white. Somebody in this case, and I don't know who it was, I suppose we find out near the end there was an attorney involved. He knows what's up. He knew this was there to do. But it's not stated what he actually did. And the court doesn't explain what they actually did. And you have to go read the final step of the code that they're referring to see the answer. But I want you to hear this, and I want you to see if you know by what I'm reading, and I'll kind of call out some of the clues, the elements that tell you we're not dealing in homeless people, we're not persons, we're not dealing in vehicles, we're not even really dealing in the Eighth Amendment, although that is where they go. But it creates the standard by which that subject matter that's not spoken is measured. Let's see if we can find some of the clues of what we're actually talking about that's never stated in these articles. That when you read the news, I tell you, they're noticed to you. If you can read between the lines, if you see the elements, the news is giving you information of the state that you live in. I don't mean your state, like the state with a name. I'm talking about your condition. And this is one of the subroutines running. The occupations, and it's all based in the system. Everything is converted to that system. It's one of the most difficult things to avoid. And in this case, in this discussion, I can go everywhere that people have a problem. Why? Because this subroutine is a core subroutine relative to everybody's existence and the way the system is wired and how it treats everybody. In fact, what underlies this is for us, me, I have a rule that is in our complaint already. It's been there for months and months and months. It's a style rule. that speaks to that same subject matter, even though I'm talking about public domain and mineral entries and private property. So, I'll give you another little clue there. I've talked about it before. Nothing here is new. I was excited to be able to see something that just speaks right to the one of the subroutines that most people miss. And it's important to see, and it's not inconsequential to see, that they even stole the guy's truck, the thing he lived in. The city, the government could care less how low they drive you. But look at what they talked about. The Eighth Amendment in Washington State is not even congruent if you don't understand. There's also the 14th Amendment that brings the state subject, that the state itself was okay with taking someone who was in the gutter, I mean, in the street, in his car, and taking that away and sticking them in the gutter. That for those of you that are state citizen oriented, or, oh, I'm not a citizen, federal citizen, I'm just a state citizen, this is a state that didn't care to beat down someone and beat him down some more. The city, Seattle here, is one of those transformational states. It's one of those Agenda 21 places. Nikki. Her name's Nikki. She's up in Alaska. She was exposed the height of where Seattle is relative to this very condition. Then you will have no property and you'll be happy. Well, you're not going to be happy, but they'll be happy. And you're controlled. And you're in controlled where? Where? Right in the gutter. And then they'll come with their little sweepers and clean you out. Well, somebody finally stood up and an attorney helped, but they don't tell you the truth. So the Washington Supreme Court on Thursday, listen for all the elements. We'll go right through this. Unanimously held that a homeless person's vehicle automatically qualifies as a homestead without the need for a declaration, and that the impoundment of the vehicle and associated costs constituted excessive fines, a violation of the Eighth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The question, do you hear right there what the actual subject matter is? They have told you in this point. In this opening paragraph, they've told you that it's actually not about the Eighth Amendment. It's an imposition of a different subject matter. That the Eighth Amendment stops to the extent that it does. And they describe all that. And this is all the other elements are. The case involves Stephen Gregory Long, a 56-year-old Native American homeless man who worked as a general tradesman. In July 2016, Long parked his truck on a property owned by the city of Seattle and stayed there for 3 months in violation of Seattle Municipal Code 1172-440B, which prohibits parking for longer than 72 hours in a single location. As a consequence, a city contracted towing company impounded Long's truck and imposed a fine of approximately $950 for costs of impoundment. The city also issued a $44 ticket. Okay, this was also found out to be an unused city parking lot on top of it. But there's a code, right? Upon Long's request for a hearing in municipal court, the magistrate found that Long parked illegally, but waived the $44 ticket and reduced the fine to approximately $550. The magistrate drafted a payment plan that required Long to pay $50 per month. Long reluctantly agreed to this plan despite knowing he could not afford to make these payments and fearing that he would lose his truck at a public auction. That's extortion. And now we're going to look at the extent of what wrongful extortion is. But he also was fearing. That's a terrorism by those that rule you. That's not even the subject matter looking through to see. I'm telling you that's what they're doing to people. And they're willing to do it. And this is a magistrate that's supposed to be imparting justice. And that's supposed to be, if you read the first statement, that's not what he was saying and doing was not to be questioned by a law official, a judicial officer. And this is also a side. That's why I said this is going to get a little bit difficult. There's so many subject matters here to be showing you what is supposed to happen what properties can be levied immediately and what's not and what's supposed to be recognized, and you don't even have to assert it. That is where I'm at with the mining mineral claims. There is something they're not to touch, and they're supposed to know that. Just touching it is their third rail. But going on now, I want to keep still focused on what are we looking through. When we see these letters coming on the screen, green, going down the black screen, what is it really? What's the subject matter underneath that they're actually talking about but not mentioning? Long did not contest his parking illegally, that he parked illegally, but filed an appeal under the Rules for Appeal of Decisions of Courts of Limited Jurisdiction, the RALJ appeal, against the fines. Essentially, Long's RALJ appeal of the magistrate's order argued that the impoundment, quote, violated the state and federal excessive fines clauses, substantive due process, and the Homestead Act. Long's motion for summary judgment on this ground was previously denied by the magistrate. Slight interjection. What caught my eye was this homestead. What I deal in with mineral estates is also there's a homestead law of land. This is a land disposal. These are the things that are not to be touched. In fact, in the state of Oregon, it says that when you're dealing with a patent relative to these disposals, there's no jurisdiction in a judge to even talk about it. And yet they're not going down that for this. And when you find out that his vehicle, his truck, is part of that act because of the law, you'll see what it comes under. In other words, this is what they call personal property, not real property. That's not even accurate, those terms, but we'll have to go with it for the time being. It is something that's now called a homestead. This is not in disposal law. And so this immediately, do you see the clue there? It's considered homestead, but it's relative to fines. That's a clue. On the RALJ appeal, the Superior Court rejected the substantive due process claim, but agreed with Long that the impoundment costs were unconstitutionally excessive under the Eighth Amendment of the Federal Constitution and that the payment plan violated the Homestead Act. However, the court concluded that the impoundment itself did not violate the Constitution. You understand, start going back and understand the levels of splitting hairs that they do, that you have to do when you're looking at this and attempting to defend yourself when you find yourself in the battlefield a minefield that you've been placed in or found yourself in, and you're trying to figure out your way out of it. Well, we saw a couple more clues here. It was unconstitutional, not because of the state law that would protect its citizens in their most dire positions. No, it had to do with the federal constitution. They didn't mention the 14th here, but that's the only way it could come back to control the states. And so we're back into where? We're back into Title 42, Section 1981, right here. If you didn't get that clue, I'll just let you know that. And then they said that the payment plan violated the Homestead Act. Now, this Homestead Act is not the Disposal Land Homestead Act. That's untouchable. And so this is a civil privilege. I hope you get that clue. I guess I'm going to have to explain just a little bit. For those of you that know this, I'm hoping that you already know. You should have heard already what this thing is. While I'm reading this, I'm already knowing where we're going. I'm already seeing what it is. Now I'm just wondering how I'm reading to find out how is the court treating it while it throws the substantive process away, that it throws away the certain provisions that you'd think would protect him. It wasn't just good enough that he's in the street and he gets kicked while he's in the street. No, that wasn't justice enough. No, we got to go by these black and white things because actual justice is not actually available because they don't care about you, and the city certainly didn't. And they did I was frustrated listening to this nonsense they're saying about how we got there, but we have to listen nonetheless because it's instructive. But we're also, for me, here's another element. It goes to that, they're not even talking about this other element. Those of you that understand what I've said, when we say the word Homestead Act, and we're not talking disposal, that's a very big clue. You should already have the answer. What's the underlying subject matter they're speaking to? And this is on everybody that this stuff attaches to. Vehicles, impoundment, the seizure, the type of case those are, the regulations around it, the underlying regulations. This is speaking to all of that. The statuses that required to have those is all spoken to. And this guy, through his lawyer, makes those servitudinal status acceptances in order to prevail in this case. That's a whole other clue about where we live. I guess I'll say the prison, another subroutine of the prison we live in. On the RALJ appeal, the Superior Court rejected substantive due process. In other words, they gave him his due process, which I don't understand, where it was supposed to be perceived, as you saw in the title. This was supposed to be his, that is not to be questioned by the court. At any rate, this is the question I have while I'm reading through here. And why they went through there is because it's not relative to the front end of this relative to impoundment. It has to do with something else. At least that's the only way I can understand how the court could come up with that. Because we're not looking at what they're talking about. So the impoundment itself, they said, did not violate the Constitution. No, the government come in and steal all your stuff. That's not unconstitutional. For those of you who think you have constitutional rights in this regard. So the subject matter of the impoundment is not a constitutional thing, protectable under the Constitution directly. Again, evidence that we're dealing in a civil privilege, not the liberty so-called, the thing that's attached to a fundamental right, but this privilege of being able to do something that's recognized by the courts because it is given by the creature called the state. Upon further appeal to the intermediate appellate court, interjection here, folks, look at all the steps you have to know. This is another way they do it, but this guy's going through it. And I have to say, his attorney did it right. But what the answer is at the end is not right. I agree that he should have won, but look at what they're having to do in order to get in there. All the steps. He's without his car still. His car also had his tools. He got the clue. He was a general contractor type guy. He has no means now. And that becomes important. But that also becomes part of one of the elements relative to the actual subject matter. That isn't vehicles, isn't the impoundment, levying, fines, fees, taxes. It's none of this. It's not even the Eighth Amendment, the underlying condition. Upon further appeal, the intermediate appellate court, Long's Eighth Amendment argument, was also rejected, but the payment plan was nonetheless found to be invalid under the Homestead Act. If you think these judges know what they're doing and they can cause more trouble than they're worth, well, you just heard it right there. But this is the thing that goes on. And all the while, you're without your rights and your property and everything that you thought was yours. Well, also, there's an underlying problem about how you had your property. That's another thing. And there's an underlying problem, likely with a lawyer, he probably wouldn't do the pre-plea remedies that would have allowed the assertion of some of these things. However, getting back to the story and the way that it actually works out. The appellate court additionally held Long failed to show impoundment was unlawful pursuant to Article 1, Section 7 of the Washington State Constitution. It ends up being that's essentially irrelevant. And so there's not much more time to spend. I just wanted to point that out. The attorney put that in, but it really is not applicable. And it definitely is not applicable to the underlying subject matter. The Washington Supreme Court granted review on all three issues, i.e., Eighth Amendment, that's your federal Eighth Amendment now, Article 1, Section 7 of the Washington State Constitution, and the Homestead Act, the Washington State Statutory Homestead Act, not the Homestead Act of Disposal that we've heard and which was removed long ago. And what remains now is these mineral entries. There's the Lode Law is an act that did the same thing to dispose that land. This is not those disposal acts. On the Homestead Act, the state statutory legislative created privilege for the subject matter that they're dealing with. The city stated that Long failed to file a declaration under RCW 6.13-0401, which the city argues is a necessary procedure to qualify Long's truck as a homestead. Long responded that he did not have to make any declaration because he occupied the truck as his principal residence. which qualifies the truck as a homestead automatically. And that blew me away. Because I'm in my mind goes in disposal of, that's impossible, folks. My mind, behind the woodshed, was saying, that's impossible. But it was not impossible because I know what the subject matter is. But you think about that on the surface, how is a truck a homestead? Well, it's not. It's because the legislature can make red lights green and green lights red, and that's the law. In this case, they made something called a homestead, and they defined it as real and personal property. They also put an additional definition relative to your primary residence, or your primary residence, your principal residence. Principal is the actor that can do crime, the principal. But it's your residence. That residence has a federal connotation. You're an alien in the state, and you're protected by the federal government that's doing something. These are all statuses that are in these words. I hope those of you that have been studying, have you seen a bunch of more clues to tell you what are we actually talking about? So they created a rule, and this is why your definitions don't work sometimes. If the legislature says green is red, you have to go through and say, well, green is red. Because that's how it works. They said that a truck, in this case with the additional fact that he was using as a principal residence, constituted under state law, careful, your states may or may not do this, the Washington state law allows that the courts must see automatically that he is living in a residence and not the truck that was the vehicle. What is this condition that they have to make provision for? What actual subject matter are they speaking of? Another clue. They said, though, that the court agreed that long stating that his truck was, quote, an occupied personal property, in quotes. And when you find their statute, you'll see this stuff. It's written right all right here. Under the statute, they say no. And does not require a declaration because it automatically qualifies as a homestead. Not the disposal side, the civil side. The privilege side. Not being privileged, like the cancel culture. The fact in black and white that you can do a thing if you can set up the facts for that thing and it has a force and effect. However, the court added that Long's Homestead Act claim was premature because Long got his truck back and the city had not moved to collect on Long's debt, i.e., the fine and related costs of impoundment in accordance with the magistrate's plan. Now, I don't know how they did that because that magistrate's plan is in force and effect. And this is another style of imposition in the same subject matter. And also then there's a reality that steps in relative to when force and effect happens. So I don't understand, again, that you see how they split hairs and they get it all wrong. These courts mess everything all up. And they do this on purpose, I'm sure, that you have to keep track of the bouncing BBs everywhere. And try to assemble the case and keep the focus on your case. This is why I keep trying to tell people, I may harp on some things, but it's because that's what they're trying to loose the bindings on that so that the court is given plausible ability to not look at that very core thing to your whole case. That's what's going on in this whole case as I'm looking, not a clue as to the underlying subject matter. It's just the corruption that the courts are, how they go about dismantling somebody. And this is just a phenomenal case on its own for quite a number of things. Beyond the homesteads of truck, that's against state law. But this attorney was able to hold this together, notwithstanding this splitting of the hairs and the multiple levels and all the time it was taking. And so now we hear that he finally got his truck back, which means he was getting his tools back. Now whether what he does with that, I don't know. But the point is that that becomes another clue. What is it? What's important about these clues relative to what he has, what he can keep, and the underlying why as well is sitting here impliedly. Those of you that do the study on this and have researched this subject matter should already have the answer. I'm just telling you this. I had it in the first paragraph. Not saying exalt all my capacity. I'm telling you the elements are here in these news stories to tell us what we're really into. When you look at this guy, he's the bottom of all of us. He's the worst off of all of us. And what the state is willing to do, you think you're different than this guy. You don't really understand. Because we're all this guy. In the subject matter. Or at least presumed so. And so, move on more here. On the state constitutional issue regarding unlawful impoundment under Article 1, Section 7, the court rejected Long's claims of privacy violations and the unreasonableness of the impound, stating that the city had the authority to impound Long's truck in enforcing its traffic regulations and that it was left with, quote, no reasonable alternatives, which is a fascinating statement. Fascinating statement. No reason why, which means this is an administrative thing where you have the right to make alternatives. In other words, the notices that they may have sent him, how they delivered them, I don't know. Because this, when you look at residence, you have to have a residence address. And so this is a whole other thing and brought up a whole other idea, concepting relative to, they called it homestead. They're not dealing with the land, they're dealing with the civil, the legal home. For those of you that did, you know, have done tax studies, you know what the home is. Has nothing to do with the hearth, has nothing to do with where your family lives, has nothing to do with your life and stability. Another civil definition utilized by civil rights to take actions of every kind, and you see that they will and they do, and it takes this rigmarole to start to get through all of that. Remember, this guy's still home. He's still at the bottom, and the courts are kicking him around. The court rejected Long's claim for privacy. You have no privacy. I'll tell you, that's the truth. Based in the vehicle side of the vehicle code, it's not a private property like you think it is. What is it, for those of you that done motor vehicle law? All this stuff is relevant to think about. What is that vehicle? And there's an extension to this. Vehicle is also vessel under federal law. Vessel is you. You got a vessel. It's your body. And so we're talking about a subject matter in there that I'm not talking about. But what's the vehicle? The vehicle is in what jurisdiction? It's commerce. It's public commerce. It's not private. And so there's no expectation of privacy. You see how that works? I hope you do. Pretty quick. And so that I looked at that. Yeah, if Article 1, Section 7 is about privacy, forget that. That's done. How do I know that? Likely, and I don't know that, I'm just going to have to suggest because they're not talking about it. Likely he had the truck registered as this motor vehicle. He had a tag. He had, more importantly, non-expired tag, which is really the key to that. The flag is the plate. But he had applied that to his vehicle. He did that. So somehow he had a residence address, which is required under the Motor Vehicle Code. That brings up a whole other set of facts that allows us to find out what are they talking about here. Also, what constitutes that, and for what? What's a residency? How to constitute it? What those things are, and what those residency evidences are relative to a subject matter. What they really are, not what they're told. Like your address. It's not just your address. It's tied to your home, not your hearth. The one in legal, under tax code. There's no reasonable alternative. So he apparently wasn't communicating, which I guess would be fine. He was supposed to be recognized ahead of time. But, and this is what I find the problem with minors, what I found better to do is when you get the first notice is you come back with them hard. You come back to them in the black and white, and you make the record immediately that shows that they don't have the jurisdiction to think they have. That would have been probably the better thing. He may not have done it. But he has a follow-up lawyer in this case who does him right but does him wrong. Does him right but doesn't prove the right subject matter. And so we don't know. And this is the problem. We're left clueless as to the actual subject matter at play in all of these in these other subject matter areas coming to coalesce in this case. No reasonable alternative. So apparently there's a dialogue, a negotiation, folks. I've been telling you that this is administrative side stuff. Which states, the regulation states, vehicles may, I don't know how many times I got to say it, whenever I see this word, may be impounded after notice. The may is the negotiation word. They cannot shall, they may, but they cannot shall. There is due process right in that word that they have to show on the record that were fulfilled. the court, in the previous court says, and I think the decision says, that that substantive due process was fulfilled by the city. That must have been in the most basic terms, because it certainly wasn't in finding out that they couldn't come after it. And that may have been partly his fault, and in an, if you will, equity consideration, it's not up to the government to inquire endlessly upon you for the, what should I say, the, what's the, what are they called in tax law? The deductions. That's actually a new idea on top of all this that I'm coming. This is your deductions. And tax law is not the hidden jurisdiction I'm talking about either. All these are here, though. All these are spoken to in this case. It's really fascinating to read through it. I was almost happy, but it's showing us a prison, which is not very fun. And people don't understand it, and they speak to the surface of things, and they don't understand the depth of it, and they don't speak to that. What I was telling you a long time ago is that these judges wear different hats, so-called jurisdictional hats. And at some point I learned about that, and I could follow a judge as they traversed from one jurisdiction, in the same court case, from one jurisdiction by terminology, from one jurisdiction to the next, and I figured out what some of that was, and I could keep up with the judge, and I answered. When they changed the vocabulary, put me in a new jurisdiction, my mind went to that category of remedy for that jurisdiction, and I spoke through that. If you want to understand another facet of looking through the code, green code, coming down the black screen like in, that this story shows you, how you look at what they're doing. They're deceptive as heck, as Hades. But I got the ability to be able to listen to those words, and I was able to track the jurisdiction. They'd keep flipping hats on me. And after about the fourth jump, they realized I was understanding what it was. And they started to get more real. In other words, I made sure I understood what I was supposed to answer within the jurisdiction they'd put their hat on. It's fascinating. And because there's this underlying subroutine affects all of it, they can do that. And as long as people don't understand this fact, this truth, this condition, thing, something I've used to see it, I don't think anybody will appreciate, well, certainly not what I'm talking about generally, but that a lot of times what they're told to do is not necessarily sufficient. And even if you have right and authority in one thing, and you're doing it more properly, or let's say it's completely properly, if somehow they shift the focus on the jurisdiction and you don't track it, they got you again. All they have to do is they show plausible due process given to somebody. Getting over into the admiralty, which I'm not talking about here, I hope nobody had that as their answer. It's a tangential type thing. If in admiralty, there's these things called savings to suitors clauses that is also seemingly one of the answers. I suppose it could be. I would only use that in the context of an aside statement to preclude the admiralty jurisdiction to move against what I had said. But this is the point I'm saying, is that in an admiralty case, if you bring up a saving to suitors provision, it allows you into the common law. But you have to understand how the court deals with that. And so I've done it. You can bridge an admiralty jurisdiction where the judge is going to be putting hats all over, all kinds of hats he puts on, all different kinds of authorities, equity, forfeiture, all this stuff. It comes out. Common law. He just puts a new hat. You don't see it going on unless you have eyes to see it, but he's putting on these new hats because you can tell by the words he's using. This is the same thing going on here. They're not telling you what the actual jurisdiction is. They're using other words. Getting back over to this, so you got to deal with how they're treating you, how they do that. And there's a lot more study behind this. I could never tell you on the air. I can only explain what I've done so far. And it is by the case-by-case basis we look at all that. Why I tell you to prepare. You have to have a lot of this under your belt before you walk in. It's a lot of work. But it's the prison we're in, and I've found a way to at least neutralize a lot of it, if nothing else. And I've been hoping, a horde of us would come show up, start burning these things, and just become even just a pain to these people. Maybe even to the extent that this Mr. Long did, but better, because he thinks he helped people. In one regard, he did, but he didn't out the real crime against everyone. So, moving back to the story, got to cut off line. It's easy to do. There's so much in my mind I want to tell everybody, but it gets too disjointed too quick unless you have a reading and a foundation. And that's the unfamiliarity of this is what causes me a problem to tell you, and maybe you a problem to understand what I'm actually talking about Even though I try to do very well, and a lot of you pick it up, I still wonder sometimes. But going back into this, the court added a vehicle owner can object to the impoundment and payment of fees, but the Homestead Act is not a sword to prevent impoundment. Homestead protections are resolved upon enforcement, not issuance of a parking ticket or impoundment of a vehicle. This court says you have to get beat on, and you have to only bring this up only at the time that you're going to be enforced against. That's a set-off. That's a deduction. That's probably more of a set-off. In this case, it's for by the Act. However, this court, this level of the court, will be found to be incorrect. Why? Because the law, if you go finally read it, when they finally cite to it, and you go read it, it says it's already working. They'll find that this attorney said it correctly, and the court finds that, yeah, this is working right up front, and it was upon the state, the magistrate, to see that it was working up front and not require someone to beg for the property that's already theirs. And this had been my gripe about minors the whole time. Why are we set to try it? Well, we don't do it, but why are most minors set to begging for the property that's already in their exclusive possession, use, and enjoyment by the grant? And getting them, okay, see, I can go off real easy. This is not that case. Homestead protections are resolved upon enforcement. The court will, I need to clarify this for you, the Supreme Court of that state will find that's not the truth. And there's a Supreme Court chief judge that says it doesn't make much sense to do it that way. It would invalidate the constitutional provision that protects it. And I would have to say that. Exactly. Because this is working in a different jurisdiction as well, and that view holds solid in that other jurisdiction they're not talking about, the other subject matter. This happens, I said, you want to see a view of the matrix, this is another type of matrix. This happens there in that subject matter. I just gave you another clue for those of you who have read that subject matter. Finally, on the matter of the protection against excessive fines, under the Eighth Amendment, the crux of the case, the court took into consideration various factors such as Long's earnings, his brief illness, his inability to find skilled employment, the self-sufficiency standard for a Seattle resident of $2,270 per month, and the large financial penalties faced by poor offenders who, quote, routinely forego basic needs, miss bills, and power at high interest rates, closed quote. What is that list of elements tied to? Which subject matter did they just list by going through that very list under the cover of comparing it to the Eighth Amendment for what? What is an excessive punishment or penalty? What is that list right there? This pretty much cinched it. I didn't even need to see more. I still don't even know what the law they're talking about. I'm looking at that jurisdiction. That statement right there, if anybody's done any subject matter jurisdiction such study in this subject matter that's behind all this, that list tells you only one thing is going on in this case. And it's being compared under the standard of the federal Eighth Constitution relative to whether or not that penalty can be considered unreasonable. What's the jurisdiction? It's not criminal law. What's the subject matter? I'm giving you time, folks. I mean, work this out. I hope you have enough study. Some of you have the study. If you don't, this is the type of thing I'm telling you. When I speak, maybe people don't understand what I'm talking about. This is the stuff I'm talking about. It's in the elements that we're told. It's how it all works out. And that our ignorance to that is what... What's defeating? Our lack of knowledge of this is defeating us. That's proper. Like I said, knowledge is not power, because it's not. Knowledge is just the knowledge of it. Now you have to use that knowledge. And using that knowledge, I'm just not that I'm under the target here, but I'm using the knowledge to identify what is this process I was in all the time. And maybe, they answered it actually within that process. But it would have made the more obvious by stating what that actual application is. And pretty soon we're not talking about the vehicle, we're not talking about the work, we're not talking about the penalties, we're not talking about the contractor that towed his car, we're not talking about the city's needs, we're not talking about the alternatives. The alternatives would have been part of something, another process. We're talking about that very process and whether or not it was fulfilled. Relative to the vehicle and the empowerment, all that stuff was substantively due process correct, but not for the other jurisdiction. This is, to me, I just get fascinated to watch how this thing works. And nobody, unless you knew this before and read it for yourself and know the elements, I don't think there's many other people in the United States that would understand what they're looking at in this story, which excited me, not because I may be one of a very few, because it's sad, because we need to understand what they're doing to us, but that I could see it. I can see that this is an example of how we can show ourselves what our ignorance is, where we start to become more aware, and then maybe start to adjust for that in what we do to respond. Moving on, in concluding that the impoundment and associated costs, quote, deprived Long of his means of living and violated the excessive fines clause, Justice Barbara Madsen stated, quote, paying $50 per month when Long made almost at most $700 would leave him $650 with which to live. It is difficult to conceive how Long would be able to save money for an apartment and lift himself out of homelessness while paying the fine and affording the expenses of daily life. Seattle asserts that treating the payment plan as excessive punishment is to, quote, trivialize the Eighth Amendment, close quote. Yet, to do what the city asks is to ignore the Eighth Amendment entirely. This we cannot do. While the Seattle City Council likely contemplated impoundment when enacting the parking ordinance at hand, it did not approve the related costs. The process of competitive bidding shows only that the towing company won the contract with the city. It does not explain how the company determines towing and storage costs, nor does the record contain this information. This is far from congressionally approved maximum financial penalty. Now, I don't understand. I hope you picked up a big problem with this statement. If it's $2,200 to live in the place and he only gets $700, there's nothing that they can nicely take. That they even did the math for that to consider this. But this statement shows you the other jurisdiction as well. They're doing a comparative analysis on how he would do what he would able to accomplish the penalty bestowed upon him. And when you got down to the means of livelihood and you took that away, kind of like the guy coming, an old miner coming out of the prison for some reason, and they're given a mule and a bag of flour and a pistol, right? This is the kind of thing they're talking about. This is where we are. This is another clue. But they're talking about the guy that makes $700 a month and no means, has no way to meet the minimum of all you other crabs in Seattle, in that bucket. Moving on, noting that a reasonable fine would still be constitutional and appropriate, the court stated that an inquiry into the offender's ability to pay is necessary, and that Long sufficiently showed that he lacks the ability to pay the imposed fines, whether in lump sum or as part of a payment plan. What is that jurisdiction, the decision on that? Also, this reminded me of the right of allocution at the point of right before sentence, where you bring forth your deductions, if you will. You bring forth how it can't work. One of those could be that it doesn't matter what the court's going to put on you, you're not going to change. That's a very serious one to consider. I'm not advocating that at all. You really have to know what you're doing there, because that usually sets up a real bad dynamic. Because that's the time when you're supposed to show contrition to the religion of the government. But anyway, this brought that a thought up, is all I guess I want to point out. And every time I hear Long, I'm thinking of Gary Long, guys, folks. Hope he's okay. And geez, or I haven't heard from him. So the reasonable fine may still be constitutional here. You understand the government's coming up. It looks like maybe we could beat this homeless, destitute guy down some more. But He showed that maybe he can't even do that much. That is in a particular jurisdiction, not in the subject matter we're talking. Now, Chief Justice Stephen Gonzalez, concurring in the judgment, went a step further and wrote that he would have also ruled in Long's favor in the state constitutional claim, stating that its protections would be rendered meaningless if a, quote, homeowner had to wait until their home is seized and a forced sale scheduled before invoking the Act's protections. And let me interject here. This gets you into the idea that if an agency does something that violates a fundamental right, you don't have to wait for the foreclosure or the disposal of that administrative claim. He doesn't talk about this, but that sits right there. That's another evidence that you can move to it. Mr. Long had the right to move collaterally to attack this, and his attorney didn't do that much. But we're going to hear from that guy right now, and we're still not hearing what the underlying subject matter is, are we? Haven't heard from him. Post the ruling, Long commented that it was great that he could help other people who also lived in their vehicles. Now, to that extent, to keep people in their only last bit of residence, yes, because the government is brutal. The government has no compassion. None. Here's the evidence. This article is so clear of what we're up against and what we have been up against. So he's proper to say he can help other people in vehicles. Yes. Because now that brutality is now removed from this point. But it goes on to say that Long's attorney, Jim Lobsens, applauded the ruling as a big step forward, stating that, quote, the ruling says you have to take into account the financial resources of people before you impose these fines and costs. Now, he's talking about what? Levying fines and costs, and whether or not someone can do what? Find their deduction, find their privilege, find their exemption. In other words, the big step forward was the government was simply to follow the law. The court just stated the law that you get to get beat down if your head comes up a little higher than the rest. You crabs in the bucket. And this is the state that you're looking at. This underlies the subject matter of what's going on in this country. If you get a little bit more than the average peon, they can take it from you. And the average peon is all what you get that's where. It's not as a fundamental right. It's dictated by the state statute. Your livelihood, your nature, your living is dictated by a statute that the legislature created, claiming to be representative of your needs. And this is a very minimal level. And so that's another clue. What subject matter are we talking about that looks at your means of your living, that keeps you with your means, that keeps you with the minimum and basics, that keeps you just enough to keep the rice in your bowl so that you can go out and get a little bit more that these guys can come and take? What subject matter is that? That all that gets worked out in the due process provided in that subject matter, that when you push it through a vehicle impoundment was substantively enough, showing that that state process is invalid, and partly because your judicial branch didn't immediately give you the rights that you were gave, that this, the attorney saying that the courts have done a great thing is really a misquote. It's an underquote. Because they never talk about this. What's the subject matter jurisdiction I've been talking the whole entire time? What's the actual subject matter? It's not the motor vehicle code. It's not impoundments. It's not what the contract law and the supposed rights, because it was on a minimum. The tow company had the minimum bid, so that would be the reasonable costs. What is this subject matter that goes and looks at your means and what you have, how much you have relative to what's out there and what you need? What's that actual subject matter? In commerce, that is regulable. That is from those legal things that you derive from the system. that turns into something. What is that other thing? I told you, I gave you a clue. We're talking about commerce. We talked earlier about the Fed, and what it institutes, and these Federal Reserve notes, and this fiat system. And your tax system is about collecting your use of those benefits, the benefits that gives you. When you overextend yourself, and back in the 30s, they stated, they realized, well, we can't beat these people down like Seattle intends to do. All governments will intend to do this. Beats everybody down, even when they're down. Just kick them when they're down. Kick them harder. That's your government. The system said, well, we can't really do that if we want to survive. We've got to keep people viable. Otherwise, we can't pick their bones. And they did this in the 30s. They came to this realization. And they provided a subject matter, a vehicle. They said, essentially, your commerce activity can't be so imposed by debt that it destroys you. And so we're going to give you, we gave you some things that you can deduct, that you can, we'll leave you, we'll pick your bones to this extent. What jurisdiction, what subject matter is that? I'm not seeing it in the chat. I've been looking over once in a while. I don't see it. Maybe I missed it. Some of you, I hope, maybe listening or to listen will understand this. The subject matter underneath this is stated eventually in the RCC code. One more story. Ruling helps protect homeless people from having cars towed. Let me look at that homeless. Homeless. We all think that's a home in the hearth, folks. That's your tax home. That's your corporate home. That's your residence address. That's the creature created by somebody within the context of the statute creating a corporation, that person, that legal entity. That legal entity that's doing what? The business of doing business. The thing that you apply, like an applique, you stick it to yourself when you say your vehicles are under commerce and you don't identify that it's not. Not saying that that's a savior because they're going to come and steal your stuff then anyway. Remember, he had to claim to be the resident in order to get this. But I've been trying to show you that when it's not in that sector of law and you have other laws that say they're not supposed to touch, now you have the same condition. But you're not underneath that fiat system. You're not underneath the commerce. You're not underneath the regulation. And when lately, in the last few years, doing collateral attacks against that using disposal law to show the fraud of the imposition of a statutory law, you don't need any of that. The problem is they also don't want to expose what's underlying this. What is the jurisdiction? Let me read another statement here, just another story. We've got two more. I got two links that I just want to point out. The decision is one of the first by a state high court to interpret the 2019 U.S. Supreme Court ruling that says state and local governments, not just the federal government, must abide by the Constitution's ban on excessive fines, said Bill Maurer, an attorney with the libertarian-leaning Institute of Justice. So now you see this is actually a political action. Libertarian meaning. There should be nothing here on any political view or leaning or anything. And so we get all little tidbits of information that are irrelevant to the underlying subject matter, which we shouldn't be focused on, because if you know that, then you know what you're speaking to, and then you know what you need to start doing to avoid it so they can't treat you like this. What's important about the decision? It sets out a way for the court to decide whether a fine is excessive and adopts the analysis that you have to look at circumstances of the defendant, Maurer said. $500 fine to Bill Gates, he's probably got that in his couch. To someone who's living in his truck, it's ruinous. That's a misstatement, because most people get crazy about the fact a multi-billion dollar corporation doesn't have to pay taxes. You're missing it. Bill Gates could very well set himself up if he hadn't chose to do it the other way and continue to profit from the system and take advantage of it, to your detriment, no less. To him, $500 is really nothing in his time. It just doesn't matter. That's the only part that would be the difference. But actually, he could make himself look worse than this guy in the street. And a lot of people get angry about that. Well, how come a corporation cannot pay taxes? It's because they got attorneys that understand how to play the system, the nested system of protection, how to set up things. And it can be a lot of work. In fact, this brought up memories. I was thinking before I went this other direction, to do the very same thing, just set myself up. So I got, well, I have nothing, but I would have nothing and they couldn't find even better. And then I could possibly move into having stuff, but long ago I just kind of sort of gave up on trying to feel like I needed anything. That wasn't a part of what was going on in my future anymore. And so I really haven't had aspirations for higher things. We have injustice going on. I focused on seeing what I could help with that. And I knew it was coming against me. It had come against me, so I was just working out some of that for myself. And then a friend of mine said, why don't you tell people? Which I was reluctant, but finally, 2009, I found a network and I just started talking. Started to try and present this stuff. Try to give you the future look, what you're under, the oppression that you're under. What jurisdiction is this? This style of analysis, folks. It's only one. Anyway, so this other one, there's another way to read it. There's little clues here and there. And then I wanted to also say that, another story here, automatic homestead exemption conditions, declaration of homestead, declaration of abandonment. Had to do with the Washington State. It is the code. This is where you'll get these links. And I don't want to give the punchline. I want you folks to read through. I want you to really read this case. I want you to read. I was debating whether I was going to tell you. What is that subject matter jurisdiction? I really want you to read through this. I want you to listen to what I've just said and read through these report again so you see the words. Then I'm going to give you the links. I think I've decided here. I'm going to give you the links that you can go to this act in Washington. There's three links. And guess what? Just like I found this after this year, just this week, breaking out, I found a rule that the employees of the federal government cannot act to prejudice the government. I found it. That was another whole thing. In black and white. Very important. That's what this is. Got to go. To find that, I had to go through three steps of rules in links to get to the final answer, which I'd never seen before. I knew. I'd heard it's there. I found it. I found that the acts can't prejudice the government. The acts of the federal employees cannot prejudice the government. They cannot act prejudicial to the government, more appropriately. And I looked at that and I said, see, my view about this grant, and we know as grant and mineral estate entrymen that the title is held in trust for us, the beneficiary. We're dealing with an obligation of the government to protect us in that title and our enjoyment and use. For any employee to come against us prejudices the obligations and duties of the government and violates now a black and white provision I just found. Is what happened in this, I had to go through three steps in Washington law, a state I have no clue about, but had an idea what the subject matter was, looking for it, looking at all the words. You finally get in here and you start to see all the words I've been telling you to keep track of. They're defined, but you have to go through three steps, interestingly three, to get to what the actual subject matter I'm talking to you to look through this story to see is upon us, is what we're presumed into, is what everybody complains about when they say, oh, I'm capital letter straw man person. And you miss the point. Someone fed a line, a bunch of line to people, and they've swallowed that and stopped. I just use that now because I found the rule in the state just south of Washington that explains what that style of letter form is and the subject matter that we're pertained to, and that's this subject matter here requiring residency in the federal municipal court. And the subject matter is exclusively federal. You're dealing in the Washington case on a state matter. The Supreme Court says the Homestead Act gave him an exemption. That we have to look at that, and the legislature gave a privilege for someone to use that against this imposition. Because we presume everybody to be what? When you live in a society that uses debt as money, you can be nothing more than debtors. You have no rights. You have only the rights you gave. And unless you get to go to the black and white to say, that's not me, or that's not applicable to me, and this is what, why, you don't get anything. They will kick you when you're out. They will take your stuff and kick you into the curb, and they were fine with that. That's your state citizenship, for those of you patriots that went, oh, I'm a state citizen. That's what it's talking about. This whole thing is an abortion. and it's somehow got a heartbeat still, and I ain't figured it out. But I'm not going to tell you. I want you to go get these links. I want you to start with the stories. I then want you to get into the first link I show you and go and go and keep stepping at three steps past the story. And you see where the what the jurisdiction is, what the subject matter actually is. And it's only half of what's available in that subject matter, which also fascinated me a bit. And so I've decided not to tell you. I'm sorry. I was thinking I was going to tell you. I don't want to give you this punchline. This is such an important lesson. This is such an important way to explain. There are elements in these news, the notice to us, what they're actually dealing with. It's substantial to how we are treated. It's substantial to how we are mistreated, actually. And how we allow ourselves to be treated because we don't understand it. That I don't think I'm going to give it now that I'm right here. I don't want to give you the punchline. I want you to read it. And I'm going to have to leave it over that you can do that. You just read through, and you're going to find in a statute, you're going to find under one of the definitions what this pertains to. And I'll give you the term so you don't miss it. You're looking because they talked about being forced at the end of that article by the chief judge saying that you shouldn't be forced. Well, guess what? You get to that final step in the statutory hierarchy, and they have something called a forced sale in quotes, and it tells you exactly what it pertains to. That is what you're in. That's the prison they presume you in, and they will do everything to avoid telling you that, and they will violate you so that none of the crabs understand what it is as you climb out. They all think, oh, they did us right to be able to pull everybody out. Oh, it was such a bad thing to beat on that guy. They don't realize what they're actually talking about. There, you're seeing the criminality of government, notwithstanding the black and white, to say, no, you're not supposed to touch that. They touch the third rail, and they don't seemingly die. These people are not real, right? This is definitely an illusion and a fiction. And yet everybody is, hey, he got saved. No, he didn't. What they told you was, if you don't make enough, you are penalized more than the rest. But when you make just a little bit more, we're going to be here to take it from you. We're going to justify everything we do to you. And that level is just the average of what it takes just barely to get along in a smart city. I hope you pull this together as well. This is so much a pivotal place. I'm still excited. I'm not excited in a good way, but I'm excited in one regard. My mind is saying, if you just understood, if you looked through the matrix, that this is telling you, these letters here in this story are the green letters coming down the black screen to one of the subroutines that are moving. And if you hold your eyes just right, you'll see the little dragon holding the balloons in the background, 3D, winking at you. And until you get to go get there, people don't understand. I'm certain people don't understand what I'm saying. And this analysis is applicable all over the place. And this proved again what I've been saying, where the system stayed strictly on one side. It's actually an ongoing administrative condition that's been put on you. Anyway, I don't want to do more. I'm going to let you go. You go track through. You find for sale. You find what the subject matter is. And then I want you to then sit back and think about what I'm talking about, why I say what I say, where I have you go, why I have you do it. And this is inside the prison, I tell you, inside, and you still have things you can do. And if you don't do anything, you are treated like this, and you are at some point dealt with like the rest of the peons at the level you barely subsist, and that's going to be good, and that's the balance that you've agreed to. There's nothing in this place touching that system that allows you to come out without an attachment. That's a word, too. Attachment to you and what you do as a human resource. It made no sense to beat businesses down into oblivion when your whole society functions on everybody functioning as slaves. Now, I just say that and I'm thinking, well, okay, but we're stuck in this prison. We are in that prison. Some of us are going to be affected and some of us aren't. I've been asking you to listen to what I'm saying, start learning what this is about, start applying it, and pretty soon you become one of the trustees. We're not getting out of the prison, but they can't affect us. Your record allows the right stuff that says they can't affect us. And that's kind of disconcerting a bit because it still means we're somewhat in that prison. But that's what happens. See, we're occupied. People, this is, again, on and on. I could go on and on. I've got to be careful not to. It starts to get almost too wild, even for me. There's so many thoughts that go through my brain. I want to tell everything about how... let me do one. Let me go right through. The motor vehicle code tied to this commerce, all right? Commerce in the federal government, exclusive to the Congress. Your motor vehicle, Title 49. Your motor vehicle is underneath transportation. Commerce. It's all about commerce. Your states are just implementing commerce. Let's go to who can get a license. A resident. What's a resident's address? A resident's address is a address for your what? Your home. Your home office. Your corporate home office. You can't have one without telling them with a place to find you. And you ask for that. You create the corporation. Now, some very intelligent people will use those as tools, like you should. But I'm not talking about that. And I decided I wanted to perfect before we go into there, when I realized that's what where we should be to go into, because that's the illusion that we're under. That is the presumptions anyway. Some people are better, more intelligent than me. They stop fighting. That's how you do it. It's not giving in. It's saying this is the reality. And so I'm going to camouflage myself like they, with the blinders they've put on. That what is a resident's address? And you will look at the motor vehicle code and they'll tell you what constitutes a resident's address. You need the resident's alien business status that you tell them, otherwise they don't know. And you are to provide a resident's address for purposes of due process. What constitutes a resident's address? There's a list. It must be 20 things. If you touch any one of those and you've described yourself like any one of those in any paper you ever do, you will be presumed a resident. And it becomes very difficult. Because when you look at the pervasiveness of that list, your utility bills, just your address where you think you live, you don't live there, folks. This is another thing. The bills that you might have, your mortgages, whatever you have in the legal system, the debt system, is used to keep track of you and create that servitude in you in this system and subject matter I'm talking about. You tell them that. And a little caveat, there's a one so-called address that they don't accept. And it's not even an address. It's a location. And I found that in the motor vehicle code. It's an exception to what a residence address is. And that's what I use now. And you know what? They have never been able to get me inside or anything that I'm liable to. Wow, it's like magic. Why? Because you're talking about jurisdictions and where those jurisdictions are limited. And they are limited by law. What they work with is presumptions and your failure to refute a defamation on your character or a fraudulent statement about your actual status. It's understood and understood in equity to be negativing your character. And I located that here in the Tennessee case, reading through the Chancery book. I finally located that too. I knew it was there, but I had never seen it. And I looked at one of the first answers from the defendants was an answer negativing the character, dissing on the plaintiff or the relator. And I said, do you recognize this? Again, you see the elements. This is how you see it. You're looking through the matrix of what the words say to see what they're talking about. That's what they do to us. And so you have to be keen to be able to stop that. And if there's a judge that won't allow that, will allow that without doing justice, you have to nail that immediately. A lot of times they know what you're doing, so they don't go that far. And I can't tell you how to do that. That's something you have to understand, and you have to start to use the remedies to call this out. And I say that's what I do is I load the record before we get there. I kind of telegraph to those that understand, maybe you shouldn't go this direction. I know about it. How about if we just avoid that? And a lot of times that's enough. A lot of times that's enough. If you haven't made any other blunders in your paperwork. But again, no silver bullets. I got to get back to this thing. How do they create? They presume upon you if you have any number of things. Like they presume upon you the status of the capacity to pay if you agree to certain things within the context of the subject matter that's actually underlying what the Eighth Amendment keeps from being imposed upon you that the government is wants to, they are, just can't help but want to put it on you. Which is brutality. It's force. It's the machinations, the grinder that they put you in, and they're willing to do it. If anybody thought the goodwill toward men is in that which recognizes person, you're deluded. But the question is, how do you stay out, or at least have evidence that you're not in? And that's where I came up with, look at what's required at residence address, and you have to avoid that. And then you figure out, you look at that, oh, how am I going to survive without it? It's not so easy what they've done. However, there is a place that's not residence address that's recognized and can't be touched by them. And that's one of the stones of foundation of your journey out. It's a clue. It took me years to find that. I don't know what else, I don't even know how to tell you to find it and what, I don't want to say more than that. Because I don't want to give people the idea that there's some magic thing that goes on. Oh, I just put this on a piece of paper without prejudice and now I'm protected. You don't even know what that does, you know, what it comes from and what it does when you just do that. I know because no one has told me, and I'll give you a clue, their follow-up action after they gave notice of that. It's only notice. Again, due process is going on. Under what subject matter of law? It's the same one that's adulterated to make you think that your birth certificate means a dang thing. Oh, there's an account for you to go collect up. In fact, I think that was an email that came. This is the nonsense. He's trying, a video, somebody in the YouTube trying to say, don't buy into that. I've been telling you that for years. Don't buy into that. And it's not relevant. Only when they ask and you give. Well, that's in the commerce side. Why did you give? Why did you convict yourself in making those statements on something you want applied to you? Ask for the benefit and then try to say you're free from it, from the obligations. Come on. Let's not be hypocritic here. It's not easy what I'm telling you. I'm just telling you, but you can see it. You can see right through this story. Look at if I didn't say it already enough times, what you're focused on finding is the term forced sale. So that I don't get anybody who don't quite get it, but does do the click, want to see the fast answer without getting the depth, not understanding their condition. So tomorrow I get an email saying, oh, I got this statement I made and I'm in trouble. I'm not saying you act on any of this. This is an observation you make. What matrix am I exposing to you? I almost can't even give you that because that'll tell you exactly what it is. So guess what? I guess I can't tell you what that matrix is. We've been talking the subroutine and the matrix. The matrix in the matrix. I'll say it that way. As soon as you see for sale and what it pertains to, anybody that's had a touch on that subject matter will know what I'm talking about right now. And I'm doing this on purpose now. I'm really going to antagonize you. I want you to see this serious proof. I want you to see maybe for the first time how this works. I can tell you that's the part I'm excited about. Maybe some people will understand what I've been talking about, how I look at stuff and see through the noise, through the noise on the picture. And if I hold my eyes just right, I can see the thing that's behind and inside it, the real thing that's at work. And once I see that, then I can devise what I, at least best within the context of my own study and research over whatever time I've done it, and it's all for you. All of you do the same thing. Within my knowledge base, I can then respond knowing what the target is I'm after or to try and avoid. More than just somebody's statements on, oh, we got to sign this paper, we got to file this, oh, we got to do this stuff, we got to say these magic words. No, I'm looking at a subject matter, and they're going to have every power to try and keep it on me. And if I can't avoid it, then I better know what's inside it like this Mr. Long did, to say that, but I'm going to be limited in how bad you can beat on me. Remember, your civil rights, and this is with civil rights, Homestead Act in Washington is a civil right. It's a privilege extended to you in the context of the subject matter, in the context of commerce and your dealings in taxable matters. The subject matter is not tax here, but that's all integrated. It's all integrated because you're dealing with this thing underneath, this fiat system. You're dealing in commerce. And that's where they've gone with it. And so, I better stop. I just want to say some. There's so many things to branch off of this. It's a That's why, in a way, I'm just smiling inside. There, if people were to see what I'm saying, all of a sudden, it all starts to make sense in a way. But we're dealing, let me remind you, we're dealing with the subject matter areas in law. You're dealing in also the elements within the subject matter that constitutes the jurisdiction, the requirements within it. I'll leave that so I don't complicate things. You start to understand that for each jurisdiction. Don't make it up. Go look and see what it's told. You'll start to identify when the subject matter gets talked about that it's being talked about and that it's being talked about correctly. Then you know you're there. What is that? I go on and on here, folks. Libra code. It's fascinating. Libra code. You knows them when you sees them. That has worked. When I keep telling you about that, it works wonders. If you understand now, when you tie the elements of a something coming at you, and you don't lie about it all. You just look, take it for how you see it. Don't say it's unlawful or not. What are the elements? And what do those elements add up to? You don't have to be told. Like I wasn't by the judges that they changed their hat in jurisdiction right in front of me. Didn't see it. Well, I could watch, listen. I could hear, though. I had the ears to hear. They changed their jurisdictional hat, and I just tracked with the remedy within that relative to the question being asked. And after they do that a couple times, like three or four, they realize, they test. They prove to themselves, you know, without telling them. It's all now a magic show. They know what you understand. And as long as you keep consistent within and confined and don't get outlandish, they understand that at least you know what's happening to you. And they become a lot more introspective at that point. In one case I had, one of the very first cases as well, that's when the judge just walked out of my court. I was supposed to be evicted that day. No, that's what I was telling you. I instituted license, and I tracked. This is one of the judges that did that. And after a bit, he tasked, wants to know, how did I learn what I know? And I said, I just read it in a little property book. But he wasn't asking about that. He was asking about how I was tracking about his jurisdictional switches. And at the end of that, he puts his hand on his chin, puts his elbow on his desk, on his bench, and he stared at me for a while. And then the next thing I'm understanding is the secretary is saying he has an important emergency phone call to address. And he leaves the courtroom. I never saw him again. We had to go seek him out. The point is, the case was over, and he couldn't make that decision in open court that way. And he realized he had nowhere to go. I didn't know more. I'm young at this at that point. I'm scared to death as well, if you think this is fun and games. But I was, again, the inspiration came to me. The focus came in the last moment. I had read enough. I prepared myself. It just started to come out. I had recognized how they do this. That's what this story is for you. When you see the underlying, it's not the end-all, be-all, but when they're talking about impoundment and these costs and these fees and the excessive thing, they're not talking about the Eighth Amendment. They're talking about, if it wasn't for that little line, that little paragraph in that position, you'd be beat down in the gutter. And the government would be willing to do it if it wasn't for that black and white. Understand that. And this is about everywhere you go anymore. Why I could predict, you know, it's going to be to the point where there's cops, they're the soldiers. Libra code says they get to go home. You don't. All they have to do is say the magic words. And you better have, hopefully, something to interfere with the psychology of that, as I've been telling you, or else you may not see your family anymore. But this is a different type of deprivation. Go through the residency. You can show how it's developed. There's a provision that a place they can't go. You have to take on that and do whatever it takes to hold on to that, because they don't want you to have that either. I've had that challenge, that non-residence address. Look, it's actually a location. I've had that for years, and we've had it attacked three or four times, and they can't prevail. And that is the postal office. You've got to go into their regs, and you can find out how to defend yourself. Yes, it's a lot of work. The prison is very complex, and it's multi-shelled, and they get you looking at the wrong stuff, and yet, if you have the eyes to see, you can see right through it. Anyway, it goes on and on about how to do this, and I don't really want to know, I mean, I don't know what to anybody is interested in. This is part of the case-by-case problem. But on the other hand, I'm trying to think about how do I put this into context for anybody, y'all, but look at an impound, but it's not about that. See, That's the resonance. I don't deal in that side. I do a collateral attack that puts it on the disposal side, and it's a grant to us. And as I said earlier, finding the prejudice against the government, the acts of the official are prejudicing the obligations of government in that side where they wouldn't be on the civil rights side, because those are the privileges given by the legal entity to the creature of the government that you created. Okay, I think I'll pause. I'm excited about this, folks, because it's really his focus. So let me, I've just said that before. Your focus is on, ultimately, you're getting to find out what a forced sale is relevant to. And you'll see, you look at the word right around it, you'll see the word in the tax code, you'll see how it all integrates, you'll see what all this ends up being relegated to. You'll see what I've been telling you about that style rule and that jurisdiction. And why it's so important that I just put it back in the document and said, you cannot use this style because it's a defamation. It interferes with our status. It prejudices the government status that we earned. And you can't do that. And we do not receive, in fact, I said, the reason why we don't get communicated with is because it would be mail fraud to communicate with as the system has to. Those aren't words you just, because if you're taking notes, you don't just copy those down and throw that at somebody. I'm telling you, there's a process of understanding that gets you, we have a record that I can rely upon that for. That's why I keep telling you about these records. I have a 10 or 12 year record built about these points in relative to dealing with the government and our mining claim. Now, if I'm focused on that, how can I see this other stuff? Because I started over there. I started like everybody does, not knowing the prison they're in. You have to understand you're not innocent there. You're a resident with obligations, liabilities, and culpabilities. And so there's a whole different beginning. And you can opt into it, or you can ask it upon yourself, or when it's imposed upon you, you could do some of the wrong things. I'm very glad that people living in homes in Seattle don't, in their cars, aren't going to have them taken. But you have to understand why ultimately they've gotten people into that capacity is what they're doing to this country. Why the IMF says that vaccine policy is the new and better economic and fiscal policy. It's the same servitude. With that, moving on. Breaking. Governor Inslee to mandate COVID vaccinations for all private businesses. But again, I don't know what to say more than I'm just pointing out it's going the way I told you it had to. With this, this is how they destroy this place, because it is where all the keys are, the Achilles heels are, that we the people do not have a clue about, because we look at the treat instead of looking at the guy, the hand holding it and the club in the other hand. And we shouldn't even be thinking we need a treat. We should back off and look at this drug pusher, if you will. This exploiter. Again, this debt-based fraudulent fiat system is a weapon. I don't know the total answer, but the more leashes you have, the more ties you have to it that they will exploit and find those one leashes to bring you in that have to be severed. That's a process. That's a ton of work. And everybody's in a continuum. I really don't have a judgment against people generally. It's just, I'm frustrated that people don't get it down on, solidly on paper and work through that part of it. No, and it is easier to do nothing. It is easier to believe you're doing everything, you're free, whatever it is, but you're not. It's just a story. If you, in this bucket of crabs, if you get over the edge, there's going to be somebody, another crab, or the fisherman that put you there to shove you back. And what your job has to do is, I'm not in that bucket, Mr. Fisherman. What the heck are you doing? Not to the limit where, you could have had a right, like the Supreme Court said. Well, it looked like those fines were constitutional. We could put them on you. It's just that you didn't take measure of the capacity to repay. What jurisdiction is that? Breaking, Governor Inslee mandate COVID vaccinations for all private businesses. There is no such thing. if you read this, there is no such thing as a private business. It's a slave owner that owns something called a creature called a business. That said, it's also a fraud, so this is something has to be fought. The point is that these people are taking possession of your lives. Well, Washington Department of Labor and Industry, staying up there in Washington, right, filed an emergency rulemaking package last week extending emergency powers to Democrat Governor Jay Inslee. This is where it all started, folks. I told you they destroyed a Republican form representative government in the first one off the plane with the so-called fabricated fraudulent Coby fraud is where this thing started, this same place. This a package, which is an extension of the current mandates, grants Inslee the ability to enforce COVID vaccine mandates on all private businesses in the state of Washington, according to elected officials. I don't want to say more. You can read the article when you get it. This is the control that's going on. If people don't listen behind the woodshed and get behind the woodshed relative to the objective basis that's not the subject of the created state, that comes more from your livelihood and comes more than even more to the communicable disease, the requirement to demonstrate a non-fraudulent exigency for those that are in what they would consider regulable businesses. You're not going to escape this. I want to only talk into this to point out they mean everybody harm. They don't care. They're coming after everything, these people. They have no power at all. You look in the Constitution, there's no power. If Washington is like the Constitution I read here, about the suspension of laws, they've suspended all the laws. And the problem here now that the legislature got involved, they may have a right to do that. Not that it's lawful, because the law, not all laws are lawful. Not all policies are lawful, as we find. That has to be challenged, but it puts the onus on the businesses now to be the one that steps up. As I told you, you needed to stop before we got here. But here it is. So I don't know what to say. It's rolling out. They're rolling it out like they should. And if you think this is not going to impose itself on you, even those that want to say nothing, I think everyone's deluded to not think this is slowly, incrementally going to take out everything you thought you knew. The transformation is almost complete. I know the lack of response says it's going to happen, but I'm hoping otherwise. Michigan school system closes. Now, despite all that, the Michigan school system closes after a large number of teachers become ill from a COVID shot. This has to do with the boosters, I think. And numerous schools in a Michigan township closed on Monday after numerous staff members fell ill, suffering, quote, negative reactions from the COVID-19 booster shots, yes. And as employees get fired or resign from their jobs for refusing to comply with the vaccine mandate, schools in the Saginaw School District and around the country are substantially understaffed. We talked about this over and over. I just want to point out again, why the news tells you that they're refusing. All you folks in Michigan that are teachers, all this stuff, anybody who is refusing, you're on the wrong side of the law. Turn it around to enforce the duty that you were shown to be the infectious principal of an infectious agent, like your communicable disease law require, and that you were denied due process and a relief from that if it's secret, and the suspension of laws to yourself, and you also denied the presumption of innocence, where you aren't actually shown to be the cause. Stop refusing. Insist that showing how the government has refused to do its duty under the law. The duty is listed in the black and white. World surge of sports people suffering sudden health issues and death. Again, the imposition by this Inslee guy in Washington is now shown, the effects of which coming is shown in all of these adverse events that are going on. And I, there's just so much to talk about. I can't even get going on it. The fact is, for any one of you to decide is up to you, but they're making it by force. It's not because they have the power to do so. They are forcing you. And then they're using your complicity with that at some level. And then to that next extent, the ones they've confused to get onto it, they use that as the army against the dwindling minority. And the only thing I can figure out to do right now, even against them, is to say, well, you're not the authority. The public health authority is the authority. The law says I have to be shown to be the infectious principal. Do you have a report that I don't? And until you find that I'm infectious principal and my doctor says that the treatment's proper, there's nothing appropriate as a treatment. On the other hand, we can look ahead of time and say, if there's something out there, maybe we need to be prophylactically protected, and we can choose anything to be. Again, now we have to have a doctor that'll do that. In fact, I said to Twitter, oh, I'm back on Twitter. My appeal, the air quotes appeal, was accepted. So they allowed my access back. And so I promptly sent an email to a guy named a ball player. I don't even know what game he plays. Aaron Rodgers is the name, where he's talking about they're all over him about not doing some alternative. And I just, it may not go anywhere, but I sent him anyway. There's a state health official, official, that was supposed to determine that he was a problem, essentially. What can you do in 288 letters? I sent that off to him, and hopefully he'll pick it up, and he'll use that to as a shield against the onslaught that he's now receiving, to show that there's an objective basis that has not been met by the government or his employer. Just as I've been talking about, it has to happen. And I gave him Title 29, the whole thing. So I don't know if he'll be paying attention. But see, these are the mouthpieces that if they had knowledge, they could start giving people education. They could be the examples, not because of an opinion, not because he has allergies, but because it's not an appropriate thing, because he's not been shown to be the problem as a matter of law. That black and white no one wants to seem to read and follow. But the world is suffering from sudden increase in sports, but young people is the point here. Young people, folks. And what are they doing? They're going right to your kids now. And then this to show you, despite this evidence of the wrongness of this thing, notwithstanding what the CDC racketeers are doing, you get the talking heads. And this guy, I don't know how this guy lasts, but anyway. Geraldo Rivera tells Fox viewers, quote, "You have no rights when it comes to the vaccine." Close quote. This all comes at the same time. Oh, and it references Aaron Rodgers. I guess that's why it came up. In a discussion concerning Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers' continued resistance to vaccine mandates, the Fox News and correspondent Geraldo Rivera told viewers, quote, "You have no rights when it comes to vaccine." Close quote. Well, is that true, folks? Is Geraldo Rivera the official that determines that? You have no rights when it comes to the vaccine. He has never read your communicable disease law, that every one of you has a real remedy for excess. It's in the habeas. Just like I've been telling you. So this guy's, he's an oaf. He's an official. He's got your ear. He states that the Aaron Rodgers has no right to continued resistance to vaccine mandates. If I told you it's not applicable, how would he be a resistor? To short-circuit everything when he blows out. See, he's not in there. If he has nothing, he's been shown to be the cause of. Geraldo Rivera, your talking head, is absolutely a buffoon. He's a criminal. He's a trespasser. He's an abuser. Everybody has rights relative to vaccine mandates, because there are no mandates. He doesn't even know that. He speaks, though, through an interesting provision we've been talking about. We've been talking about it with your accommodation. He mentions Rivera said that there are no accommodations when it comes to COVID vaccines, saying everyone should be mandated to take it, adding, quote, "I despise vaccinated people who are smug in their protection, who urge unvaccinated people to exercise their freedoms." What kind of a criminal lunatic is this guy? There is accommodation to all of this stuff. It may not necessarily be broad spectrum, but it is there. And that's if it applies to you. But only after what? The demonstration of a necessity, the non-fraudulent exigency that you are causing something that affects the public generally. And it doesn't end for the employer. It goes a couple more steps, remember. They have to show. They have the duty, the obligation and duty in federal law to show what? That you are causing financial harm to them. And then that your presence is causing some employee disgruntlement of some sort, as far as, not that their opinion's no good, but that somehow you can't work in the capacity to serve the business. They have to show all that. That's just three of them, and there's a whole list. So Geraldo Rivera, I want to call names, folks, here, but okay, I said buffoon. I'll just stick with buffoon. He's absolutely an oaf isha. He wants to say that he has the know-all. He doesn't absolutely have any law, any respect, any official objective basis in him at all, and he has the disrespect to say he can say. Federal appeals court keeps on hold Biden's COVID-19 vaccine or testing rule for large companies. So it shows he's wrong again then, folks, because this whole issue is relative to accommodation. Mr. Rivera, step up and pay attention. A federal appeals court Friday called Biden's administrative rule requiring large companies to mandate COVID-19 vaccines for employees, quote, staggeringly overbroad, close quote, and ordered that its implementation remain blocked in a divisive case likely bound for the Supreme Court. Businesses with 100 or more employees have been required under the rule to stand up vaccines or regular testing requirements by January the 4th, but that's been under question as well, or face penalties of nearly $14,000 per violation upon an emergency occupational self-safety and health administration rule made public this month. But the emergency regulation prompted dozens of lawsuits in conservative states and businesses questioning whether the federal agency's responsibility to ensure workplace safety has the power to impose requirements for fighting a pandemic. Do you think they came out and said the pandemic was a fraud, that it was COVID fraud? No. So this is a self-inflicted wound. This is politics. This is not fact. So, but a 3-judge panel called the rule, quote, fatally flawed and said it grossly exceeds OSHA's statutory authority. There's a limit, folks, and they're talking about it right here, okay? There's a limit. And you apparently have to go to court to get the obvious. I don't like it, but that's what's going on. The court said that however tragic and devastating, close quote, COVID-19 has been, it isn't clearly that the pandemic, quote, poses the kind of grave danger, close quote, contemplated in the statute authorizing the federal agency to regulate workplace safety. The statute is the code. The regulation is the implementation of that code, and this court says that that statute didn't authorize this implementation. Okay? That's how you analyze that. The mandate imposes a financial burden upon private employers by deputizing their participation in OSHA regulatory scheme, exposes them to severe financial risk if they refuse or fail to comply, and threatens to decimate their workforces and business prospects by forcing unwilling employees to take the shots, take their tests, or hit the road, Judge Kurt Engelhardt wrote in a unanimous opinion. Boy, it only took 2 years to get here, folks. That was planned, and what they're saying now, the judge is starting to say, is not proper. And yet, what has happened? What's been going on? This administrative overreach. And I have to end there. On and on to go, folks. It's just not there. You got to challenge this stuff. It's not going to be challenged on its own. Like the Constitution doesn't give you a right until you assert it. And you have to know them. And there's things that antecedent rights, things that happened before, statuses that you have that they can't overwhelm. But until you bring them up, that it won't mean anything. You don't have to do what the driver, so-called the truck owner, the vehicle owner in the Washington state did. That was another way that he was able to prevail. But look what he prevailed on. Supporting that we are all living crabs in a bucket at minimums. And the only distinction is that he made so little that the median level could not be met, that they couldn't punish him any further, that they were willing to do. Think about that, you state people. Grimmer, hope you get better. Haven't seen much of you, but thank you for what you do, what you have been doing, and keeping healthy. I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs or nature will.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, Journey with Purpose.
open up a can of whoop-ass to you, like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.